This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A tribe continues to raise concerns about an underground nickel and copper mine that's scheduled to open next year in northern Michigan. As Chuck Kornbach reports, a point of contention is a sacred area next to the mine.
The Eagle Mine near Marquette, Michigan, is being built right next to a rock outcropping called Eagle Rock. The Anishinaabe have long regarded the rock as sacred. But now the mining company owns the surrounding land, and just a chain-link fence separates the rock from the noisy mine construction zone, an area of trucks and other machinery. Jessica Koski is a tribal official with the Keweenaw Bay Indian community. She says tribal members can worship at the rock.
But it's not traditional rites of access. It's not recognizing the inherent degradation of the area. We can't do the traditional practices that we would have normally. It's pretty sad when we do go to visit.
The company that now owns the mine site, Lundin Mining, says several steps have been taken to lessen the impact on Eagle Rock. But Lundin spokesman Dan Blondo concedes the worshippers are affected.
And they will be for a temporary time during the mine life, and then it'll be reclaimed. This was all jack pine before we got here.
The Keweenaw Bay Indian community is part of a lawsuit challenging Michigan's permit for the Eagle Mine, a lawsuit that also raises concerns about potential water pollution. The tribe says if it can't stop the mine from opening, it will try to have a stronger say in how the land next to Eagle Rock looks after mining. For National Native News, I'm Chuck Kornbach.
The Interior Department is providing limited services during the shutdown of the federal government. Bureau of Indian Affairs services necessary to protect life and property, like law enforcement and emergency responders, will continue. Bureau of Indian Education schools will remain open. BIA provides services to nearly 2 million American Indians and Alaska Natives, and the BIE provides services to about 41,000 students. About a third of Indian Affairs employees are on furlough. Leading up to the shutdown, tribal leaders were briefed by the Obama administration on a possible lapse in federal funding. Tribes were asked to make contingency plans. Brian Patterson is president of the United South and Eastern Tribes, which represents 26 tribes from Texas to Florida to Maine. Patterson says there will be short and long-term impacts. He says already underfunded programs to address Indian country may suffer.
Diabetes, the high rates of teen suicide, the protection of our women, the fundamental stewardship of our ancient homelands and communities, our governance and program service deliveries to our elders, our housing. So it could be very severe.
Tribes and national Native organizations say Indian country is being hit hard by issues as lawmakers on Capitol Hill debate the shutdown, sequestration, and debt limit. They're urging Congress to reach a long-term budget that meets the needs of the government's trust responsibility to tribes. An Oklahoma tribe has launched an online store. The Citizen Potawatomi Nation shop features Native American merchandise, including apparel, art, books, and jewelry. The storefront is located inside the tribe's Cultural Heritage Center in Shawnee, Oklahoma. The tribe says the website for online shopping will help share culture and promote artists. The achievements and leadership of Mi'kmaq elders and youth in Nova Scotia, Canada were honored Tuesday. The awards are presented each October 1st, which is Treaty Day, the official start to Mi'kmaq History Month. Events are held throughout the month to celebrate their culture and heritage and recognize their contributions. During this week in 2011, Phyllis Anderson was sworn in as the first woman chief in Mississippi Band of Choctaw history. With more than two decades of experience in tribal government, Anderson leads the 10,000-member tribe. She was named 2013 Political State and Local Government Woman of the Year by the Mississippi Commission on the Status of Women. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon, and we're going to be talking about the sale annual auction, which is next Friday, October 11th. Hello, Jordan.
Hi.
This is Jordan Nigro, and can you tell us what sale is first?
Yes. SALE stands for Southeast Alaska Independent Living, and our main office is here in Juneau. We also have offices in Haines and Ketchikan and Sitka, and we serve all of Southeast.
I see. And what is it that you provide as a main service?
So SALE is a center for independent living, and we're also an aging and disability resource center. Folks can come into us with any disability of any age, and we will work with them whatever their needs are. So it can look very different for different people. One of our most popular programs that I think is probably the most visible in the community is our ORCA program, which stands for Outdoor Recreation and Community Access. Many folks have seen ORCA up at Eagle Crest in the winters and mm-hmm. out on trails in the summer and kayaks and all over the place. That's
Great.
Just one of the things we do, though.
Okay, and otherwise you can help people talk about what needs to be added or changed.
Yep,
so
people
can
come in and tell us, this is what I'm struggling with in my life, and we will try to figure out how to help them with that issue. And it really is individualized for everybody. Our goal is to help people be as independent as they can in the community.
All right. So you're an agency here in Juneau and mm-hmm. in the surrounding towns, and this is a fundraiser that you do every year.
It is. This is our biggest fundraiser of the year, and we do it at Centennial Hall, and it's just coming up, as you said, next Friday night. We have this year is going to be a really kind of fun event. We have Tram Wreck playing music for the first hour or so, and then we have a great auction with all sorts of packages. We have a package to Girdwood. We have some Alaska Airlines tickets, wherever they fly. We've got a lot of things going on for the auction this year. And Abby's is catering dinner. It's going to be a barbecue. The theme is sort of cowboy country. So if you're coming and you have some cowboy boots, wear them. It should be a really fun night. We're looking forward to it.
Right. So, yes, I like that. You added the bit about you can wear your fancy Western duds
yeah.
if you want, and music and the auction. And then the money goes to support your
yep.
program.
All the money goes directly to our programs. And you can get tickets on our website, which mm-hmm. is www.saleinc.org. And if you don't want to do it that way, you can call us at the office and we'll do it for you. You can stop in. We're located at 3225 Hospital Drive, and our phone number is 586-4920.
All right. So those are the details, but the fun part of it is live music and mm-hmm. a catered dinner and mm-hmm. an auction with what sounds like some great items, including travel.
Yep, we have lots of travel. We have a package to Haines, a package to Tenneke, a package to Gustavus. Mm-hmm. We have my office is filling up with a fair amount of nice artwork as well, and some jewelry, and we have a lot of stuff this year, and I think this time of year my office always gets where I'm kind of strategically stepping over all of the things. but it's always fun to see what comes in, and people always, you know, can score some good deals, and it all goes to a great cause, and we get a tremendous amount of support from the community, and we're really appreciative of that. And I think part of the reason for that is SALE is an agency that if you haven't used yet in some capacity, you probably will in the future, and if you never do, somebody you know has. One of our services is a loan closet. So if you have a temporary injury, say you've had surgery or something, and you need help getting in and out of your shower, we have tools for that. And we have hearing devices to help folks hear. And we know that, you know, those of us that, as we're younger, we're going to develop disabilities as we age. And many of us have hidden disabilities that people don't see. So SALE touches a lot of lives in this community. And when we have this event, we really feel fortunate for how people give back to us.
Well, it does sound like it's a wonderful way, and people are making donations to you for this auction, and now you're encouraging people to come to Centennial Hall.
Now we want people to buy the tickets. Yes.
Yeah, buy the tickets. Come for the auction. There's going to be live music, and we should go over this again about when and where. It's next Friday.
So it's next Friday from 6 to 9 p.m. at Centennial Hall, and you can get tickets online at saleinc.org, or you can give us a call at the office, 586-4920, or stop by the office, which is 3225 Hospital Drive. But the easiest thing is just to go online, saleinc.org. It asks you who you want to sit with. If you don't think you're going to make it, but you'd like to purchase a ticket for us to donate to a consumer or a volunteer, you're welcome to do that, and there's a way to do that online as well. The other thing is we are still looking for a few desserts. So actually, if you're interested in making a dessert, you can give me a call at my office, which is 586-4920, and just ask for Jordan, and we'll get it sorted out. We just have a handful left that we need, but it's the dessert auction is a very popular part of the auction. So,
well, it sounds like you've planned quite the evening. It sounds like a great time to come downtown next Friday. And yes, there's all shades of things to do.
Yeah,
at it.
There's something for everyone.
All right. So that's the annual auction for SAIL Sale. And
yes,
we've been talking to Jordan Nigro. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 2nd of October, 2013. It's the birthday of Graham Greene, the novelist, born in Berkhamsted, England, 1904. He was an avowed atheist. He'd been questioning his faith since boarding school. When he was 21, he wrote an essay referring to Catholics as people who worship the Virgin Mary. And he got an indignant reply from a young woman named Vivian Darrell Browning, explaining that Catholics did not worship the Virgin Mary, they venerated her. He wrote back to her, and the two of them met, and Greene fell in love with her. She was a very devout Catholic, and she had other eligible men who were seeking her hand. But Greene was stubborn. He wrote her no less than 2,000 letters and postcards, and he converted to Catholicism and married Vivian and went on to write novels about characters struggling to reconcile their faith with the rest of their lives. His novel The Power and the Glory came out in 1940 about an old Mexican priest who calls himself a whiskey priest, who lives a life of drinking and adultery, and at the end of his life he's living on the run, practicing his faith, even though the new revolutionary government has outlawed Catholic sacraments. And it's the birthday of Wallace Stevens, born in Reading, Pennsylvania, 1879. Thought about becoming a journalist, but he got a degree in law instead and took a job with the Hartford Accident and Indemnity Company, where he worked his way up to vice president. He was in charge of inspecting surety claims. A colleague of Stevens's said he was a very imaginative claims man. He was the dean of surety claims men in the whole country. Each day, Wallace Stevens walked 2 miles between his home and his office, and during these walks to and from work, he composed poetry. His first collection, Harmonium, was published when he was 43. Stevens said, "After one has abandoned a belief in God, poetry is that essence which takes its place as life's redemption." Here's a poem for today by Wallace Stevens, A Postcard from the Volcano. Children picking up our bones will never know that these were once as quick as foxes on the hill, and that in autumn, when the grapes made sharp air sharper by their smell, these had a being breathing frost. And least we'll guess that with our bones we left much more, left what still is the look of things, left what we felt at what we saw. the spring clouds blow above the shuttered mansion house beyond our gate, and the windy sky cries out illiterate despair. We knew for long the mansion's look, and what we said of it became a part of what it is. Children, still weaving budded aureoles, will speak our speech, and never know, will say of the mansion that it seems as if he that lived there left behind a spirit storming in blank walls, a dirty house in a gutted world, a tatter of shadows peaked to white, smeared with the gold of the opulent sun. Wallace Stevens' poem, A Postcard from the Volcano, from his collected poems, published by Alfred A. Knopf and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. And by Lumosity, Lumosity.com's daily online workouts are designed to improve memory and attention and are dedicated to helping people feel sharper, think faster, and remember more. More at Lumosity.com. Engineered by Noah Smith and produced by Joy Biles, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Here on Juno Afternoon, we've got folks from the Alaska Hotel, and Betty is here, and Joshua, and Lisa. And Betty, what are you going to tell us about?
Well, there's three different areas. One of them is we've just had our centennial, 100 years, and Joshua's going to talk about that and a little bit of the history of the Alaskan. And I'm going to talk about the bear walking into the bar and the Hotel Impossible. And Lisa's going to talk about the open house that we're having on Friday with the Art Walk.
Excellent. So we've got a whole panoply of stuff. Shall we start with Joshua?
Yes.
And so you're up as the history guy.
Yeah, I'm the guy who wrote the book.
All right. So 100 years ago in Juneau, it was pretty different.
Yeah, there was a small ceremony where the founders, James and Big Jim McCloskey and his brother, along with Jules B. Caro and Charles Hooker, they decided to take the money that they had earned from a $25 million diggings in the Cassiar region near Atlin about the year before, and they started a six-month project, which terminated in the building and the inauguration of the Alaskan Hotel and Bar. At that time, Juneau didn't have 10,000 people, but its population doubled in the next decade. The thing was, Big Jim McCloskey sold the hotel and bar 5 years after he'd built it, because Juneau didn't boom quite in the way that he had expected. There were a couple of socioeconomic changes that occurred right around the beginning of the building's history that sort of deterred him from being a businessman in Juneau, and one of them was bone-dry prohibition. In 1917, Juneau voted bone-dry prohibition, which means that the Volstead Act started 2 years before it did in the rest of the United States here in Juneau. And bone-dry, in quotes, literally means you can't even take cough syrup. Anything that has anything alcoholic in it whatsoever is illegal, which was not the case with the Volstead Act of 1920. So we had a harder, drier, and stricter form of prohibition in Juneau, which makes a very interesting aspect of our history that very few people even know about.
All right. Well, that's why we invite people like you here to tell us so. And then how long did that prohibition last?
It lasted 2 years longer than prohibition in the rest of the United States.
Okay, because it started early and then it closed out
exactly
in the 20s. And so he sold his bar? I mean, he had no customers, it would sound like.
Well, he would have been. A lot of places, the bar didn't shut down. It just turned into a soda fountain. They served milkshakes, and they served non-alcoholic beverages. Originally, it was a ladies' parlor. A lot of women were painted in the nude in the very back. It was kind of a meeting hall and a bar. The bar was the front where the Aurora Project shop is now. If you take up the floor, you'll see the original softwood floorboards of the bar. And there's another interesting aspect of the history of the Alaskan bar that hasn't really been explored or uncovered. Despite our attempts, we have not been able to recover the original bar. Well, some people, when they come up to visit, and the locals all know this, our back bar is not original. It was built by my father in 1981.
That's not historically original, no. It's getting on now, and he did a good job.
Okay, fair enough. It's an intervention. But some interventions become part of the history. And the locals really, really do appreciate the wood in the bar, and it kind of adds to the character of the Alaskan bar instead of detracting from it. But the original bar, interestingly enough, was not built by carpenters like my father, but it was built by liquor distributors. See, back in the 19th century, the way that bars were run was very different from today. A bar was given exclusivity, or rather a distributor was given exclusivity in exchange for the actual back bar. And that's why you get a lot of back bars that look very similar. You'll notice there's a photograph in the back of my book, The Life and Times of the Alaskan Hotel, that shows the back bar. If you look really closely, all the liquor bottles look exactly the same. And that's because they came from the same distributor. They're not the same exact liquor, but they mostly whiskey they served in those days. But they are from the same distributor. And so there's a uniformity in it. It sort of adds to the panache of the 19th century bar, which ended in 1918. That was an era that will never come back.
All right. Well, thank you for digging it up and then getting it presented to us.
There's one last comment that I'd like to make on that point, especially for those who've read my book. There is hope that we'll find that original back bar. There's a rumor that it resides somewhere down in Idaho. It may have been pieced apart, or it might have been collected by an antiquarian. So one of the things that we'd like to do at some point is do a road trip and try to find the original back bar if it still exists.
So you go digging into the history and come up with new adventures.
Yes.
All right. And then the other part, one other thing we were going to ask about was what's happening right now, which, yes, we've gotten all of a sudden the Alaskan is in present-day celebrity.
Yes, it's pretty overwhelming. I mean, it started out with, of all things, a black bear walking into the bar. Sounds like a joke, huh? Well, and our surveillance cameras, we have three different cameras that caught it walking by the hotel lobby, walking in front of the bar, and then turning into the bar, and then from the inside of the bar, the bear walking in.
Walking in.
And most of the ones that, and then it went international. I came in and I had a call from London and everywhere, you know.
Yeah.
But a lot of the footage that's out there isn't the entire footage for some reason. But I had a small bartender, a female bartender, and she just yelled at the bear, "You're not supposed to be here."
Oh, my.
And the bear, I mean, I always get speechless when I see a bear, in a dream where you can't talk. But the bear backed up, like, pulled one foot back at a time, and then got to the entryway and turned and walked down the street. And that was at the same time, meanwhile, over in the hotel side, Hotel Impossible camera crew was looking over the place and wanting to know where they were going to put their camera equipment. But they didn't see the bear.
They didn't get to see the bear.
No.
Well, that's what happens with wild animals. Some people see it and some don't. I think the bartender did a great thing and took... Mm-hmm. Protected everything, right? The bear
it's a wonderful thing that happened, and we can laugh about it. But if the bear would have come further in and then couldn't get out, it could have been at least trouble for the property.
Yes.
So.
All right. Well, and this being a local show, can we have the name of the bartender who yelled at that bear?
Ariel.
Ariel. Okay. Yes. I like that story.
And then that kicked off the Hotel Impossible filming. And they filmed for 5 solid days, 12 hours or more a day. So there's 60 hours of footage. And when they came, it was 15 to 20 camera people. They were just running over each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I just total bedlam. intense, total bedlam.
Big lights, I suppose.
Big lights, all sorts of lights, reflector screens that they could flip over and make different if it's sunshine or not or what, you know.
I see. And so I have not watched that show, but I understand they come and they're ready to tell you how it should be different. Is that right?
Yes. I mean, I hadn't watched it either, and I downloaded an episode from Amazon.com, and I couldn't watch the whole episode. It took my breath away. I was just like, oh, and I pushed pause and had to go for a walk and come back and pick it up again. It's very intense.
Yes.
You know, it's a reality show, and it's as intense as any reality show.
All right. And now, so there were interviews with you and them describing what it's like. And are you guys now under some constraint about what you can tell us that they did?
Yes,
to our hotel,
really, especially to the media, we can't talk really.
Right,
but we can just say that I think it was wonderful. I mean, I did. I was relieved when it was over. It was like, I'm still alive. Life goes on.
Okay,
you know? But it was a fantastic experience.
Well, that's a great thing, and I'm sorry they didn't get to see. At the end, it's good, and I'm sorry they didn't get to see the bear. But did they like coming to Alaska?
Oh yeah. I mean, they got to see the bear on the footage,
right?
And one of the directors said, "I love Alaska."
Well, that's good. I mean, I figure the more visitors who come up here and have a great time, the better off we are.
It's going to be an hour on the Travel Channel, you know, and that's good for the whole town and Southeast Alaska, really.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
No,
so
that's great.
It's a really good thing. It'll be 6 months, though, probably, before it shows.
Okay. So you had the excitement last week, and then they'll all wait for these months until they schedule it.
Yes.
Okay. Well, we'll have to make sure everybody knows when it's going to be broadcast again.
Oh, yeah.
I imagine they'll come tell you.
Oh, they'll absolutely tell me.
All right. So we had the past. Did you have something?
Oh, I certainly do.
Go ahead.
I think it's particularly momentous because of the timing in which they came. Hotel Impossible came right as the last cruise ship was leaving port, and they really got a chance to see Juno as it gets boarded up in the wintertime.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting perspective because these people are going to be encouraging independent travelers to come to Alaska because that's the only sort of business that we really get in the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
We're a year-round hotel, and we cater 90% to locals.
Mm-hmm.
And the only visitors that we really, really get to any degree are the independent travelers. And that's the sort of travel that we want to encourage, the travel that we had in generations past.
And now we'd move from, we heard about the past and the missing bar and the present with the bear and the TV crew. And next is a little into the future, 2 days from now, Elisa.
Yes, we're going to be participating in Art Walk this week. We're going to be participating in Art Walk this week.
Oh,
we
great.
Really felt like it was a great opportunity because the public will be out and exploring other installations that we would hold an open house. So we're holding an open house from 4:30 to 8 o'clock this Friday. And we will all be there to welcome people and show them around to some of the changes that Blanche Garcia, the designer, made on 8 of our rooms.
Uh-huh.
So it's an excellent opportunity for people to come and get to see them and compare and just socialize a little bit, talk about some of these events that have been happening in the last month.
Oh, that's great. Sounds like a celebration. So you're part of First Friday's Gallery Walk.
Yes,
and
that's correct.
Those hours start at 4:30 to 8, and that sounds great. So the Alaska Hotel is a happening place.
Happening place, and,
yes.
And even more so this weekend because we're gonna be offering a drink special for our new signature drink, the Alaskan Black Bear White Russian.
Not appropriate?
You'll have to come down. The first one's on me.
Okay, and so now I did want to say about the gallery walk, instead of having an artist show, we've got the hotel itself, which is, do you call it a work of art now, Joshua? Has it been around long enough to be considered more than just useful?
Oh, goodness gracious. Well, when my family first came into the hotel, and I do comment that they are the only reason that it is still even in existence. Mm. There were leaks that went clear from the ceiling into the basement. And it was in the process of becoming, if not already, a condemned building. It is the oldest continuously operating hotel in the state of Alaska. But only because, and I say continuously operating, because there are older hotels, and it's not the first hotel in Juneau. There was another hotel called the Franklin Hotel that was the first. I believe it was built in 1882. Juneau was built, was founded in 1880. And Juneau is not the first name. Juneau has three names. It's Rockwell, Harrisburg, and finally Juneau. And it's also not the oldest bar. A lot of people, I want to clear up that mistake. Mm-hmm. Although it would be very favorable to us to claim that we were the oldest bar in Juneau, that's actually not true. One of the oldest bars in the state of Alaska is actually, surprising to some, the Imperial. Originally the Missouri, as a liquor tent in 1881. It later became the Louvre, and then it changed its name to the Imperial. But we are the oldest continuously operating hotel in the state of Alaska. Now there are there's a roadhouse called the Manly Hot Springs Roadhouse, built in 1906. It's older than us, but it's a roadhouse, and it was moved from its original location a little northwest of Fairbanks. There's the Van Gilder Hotel in Seward, which is also highly recommended. They're only several years younger than us, I believe 1918. And there's the Sitka Hotel as well, but they're also, I think, 1920. So they're all a little bit younger than we are. We were built in 1913 because in 1912, Alaska became a territory. So it was built originally as a territory. It became a state in 1959. So through roughly half of its history, we're a territorial hotel. When you say a work of art, I urge you to remember that this is a Queen Anne Victorian hotel. That epoch favored individual craftsmen over corporate, whether there weren't any, to speak of corporations that were building buildings, as far as I know at that time, but this was a time in which craftsmen built their own tools as well as their own materials. And a lot of the hotel, a lot of the motifs, and also a lot of the structure, unfortunately, reflects that.
I see. Individual, idiosyncratic.
Yeah.
And nothing like the Harvey houses along the Santa Fe Railroad, where his hotels, I think, were more standardized because they knew the trains were coming.
Victorian indicates originality.
Yes. And one of the lovely things that people, I think, will notice when they come to see the rooms that have been redesigned by Blanche is her attention to keeping those Victorian and those authentic details alive and playing those off in a fresh, modern way. So I think people really enjoy the updates that she's made.
All right. Well, it sounds like it was a pretty successful effort. How did you get selected for this television show?
Well, I don't really know. I was just called, I suspect after meeting Anthony, he's passionate about historic structures and National Register places, and I suspect that they wanted to do a second show in Alaska. They had done the Glacier Bear Lodge, which is in Yakutat, and it was such a good show. It was made the highest ratings they've ever made, and they wanted to do another one. And so they were looking for a hotel in Alaska, and I think they just discovered we're on the National Register, and so that's how it happened.
I see. So you were the who they were looking for. But then when they called you, you were willing to say yes.
Well,
it sounds like it worked
not
out.
Not in the beginning. I mean, they started calling me in May, and I was really busy, and I just kind of didn't pay much attention to it, and they kept calling, and I kept missing it, and kept calling, and finally in August they got me, and I guess what got me was they said, we're going to offer you an hour on your hotel on national television on the Travel Channel, and I'm like, what?
Right. How do I even get that?
And sure. Are you sure? And he said, well, do you want to do that? And I went, yeah. I guess so. That would be good. So,
well, and by that time, you were more through the season, and so then when they could talk about when they wanted to come, you could at least say, Ah, yes, you could come.
Yeah.
Mom, admit it, you've always wanted to be an actress.
Right. Well, we're going to be the premiere, the first show on their fourth season, which should start about 6 months from now, which will be like in the spring.
In the spring, when people's thoughts turn to travel.
Yeah, that'll be perfect timing.
Yes. And
and they come back sometimes.
Oh.
Yeah, like they came back to the Glacier Bear just the weekend right before they came here. And so if you use the tools that they left us, then and it works and you're doing good, there's a really good chance they'll come back and do a quick update.
Oh, well, this sounds great.
Yeah.
And I'm glad you let us in on some of the extra story about this, because I just seen that, you know, it happened, and it's fun to hear the details.
Speaking of updates, I'd like to keep in contact with Anthony from the show, because there's another local hotel that really needs a little bit of love, the same way that this special kind of Anthony sort of love, the Bergman Hotel. And I'd like to talk a little bit about that, too. It's another really underappreciated piece of our history. The Bergman Hotel is a very well-preserved example of working-class mining architecture. In other words, it's an old miner's hotel or a boarding house. And it became a hotel shortly after we did. But the structure of the Bergman, or at least the first two floors of it, is actually older than the Alaskan Hotel. It goes back into the 19th century, and it could use a little bit more TLC in some ways. But really, the owner, James Barrett, has done a really, really good job, which he gets very little credit for, in preserving it in its original historic character. Mm-hmm. When I say that, I say original historic character, its purpose and character, to refer to people that keep their buildings honest. They don't intervene them. Architects often use the word intervention to denote a structure that has changed and that has lost its historic character. The Bergman and the Alaskan Hotel are two buildings that have not lost their original purpose and character, and that's very rare. There's a big difference between loving something because it's beautiful and loving something because it's real. So I'd like to congratulate James as well for keeping it real.
All right. So these folks were here to talk about the Alaskan Hotel, the history, the recent history, and to invite all of us to come by during Art Walk on First Friday, 4:30 to 8 at the Alaskan Hotel. They'll be there to tell you stories and show you even some of the redesigned rooms. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Such a lovely place.
Such a lovely place.
Such a lovely place.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon, and this is Ann Fuller hosting today. And I've got Valerie Snyder in the studio to talk to us about the Brown Boot Costume Company.
Thanks.
Well, I'm glad you came in. And so I understand it's new, and I'd love to have you tell me about your new company.
Yes, brand new. We will be a costume rental company for the public or a theater if you have a show like the opera. And we'll rent out costumes and we'll have accessories that you might want to buy like wigs or makeup. And it's also going to be a sewing studio. So if you have a project that you want to make but you don't have a sewing machine or you don't have a lot of space in your house, you can come in and work in our space.
All right. Well, now that sounds like something that's different than what I think of as us having in Juneau. Do you think you're the first one?
I think so. Yeah, right now.
Good. So Brown Boot Costume Company. And are you yourself a costume maker or wearer?
Yes. I've been doing costumes in Juneau for about 10 years. Maybe 9. I just did Traviata, the opera with Juneau Lyric Opera. And, I've worked with Perseverance and the operas and the high schools.
And so did you, how did you get training in that, or how did you arrive to becoming a costume designer dressmaker?
I was a theater major in college, specializing in costumes and backstage, and then I actually moved to Juneau as the Perseverance Theater costume intern. And never left.
And never left. I like that. That's how it happens, though.
Yep.
Real people into town. And so it sounds like it's going to be a fascinating place to come see what's available for rent or for purchase. And where is the Brown Boot Costume Company?
We're in Douglas on 3rd Street. The address is 916 3rd Street between Perseverance Theater and the Douglas Cafe.
Okay. Oh, so that's that same block? Mm-hmm. One of those doors there now opens up to something.
Yes.
And it's your company. Do you have a window, a display window?
Yes, we have a window, and there's costumes in it.
Soon
to be a sign.
And a sign. All right, Valerie, that sounds great. So it's in Douglas, and so when you were saying also you could work with directors or theater companies, that would be a big project. Well, it already is when you outfit the opera for a performance.
It kind of came from if somebody besides Perseverance Theater hired you to do costumes, you didn't have anywhere to work or to store it all, and we said, let's just bring it all together. So I've got some of the old costumes from the Lyric Opera and the Opera To Go, and we're getting a few donations in from other companies. So we're kind of wanted to have just a central location. So if the opera hired somebody else to do costumes, they could come in and work there, and they wouldn't, you know, have to do it out of their living room.
Well, that's great. That's sort of a step to support this whole town that's theatrical.
Yeah, to make it easier for a theater or anybody get a costume.
All right. That sounds great. And so if people want to find out, you've got your display window, and I think you said you're on the internet somewhere.
We have a Facebook page.
Great. And it's called Brown Boots
Costume Company.
All right. Now that sounds pretty easy. And does your storefront have definite hours?
Yes. Tuesday to Saturday from noon to 6 p.m.
All right. Thank you. We'd like to get these details because they're might be somebody out there listening who really needs right now to know all the details. And so you can go to the Facebook page. You can come by and see the window. And in addition, there's a special event this week.
Yes, this Friday we're going to have an opening night, open house, really, from 5 to 8.
All right.
And you can come in. You can try stuff on. We'll take a photo of you in it so you can take it home and decide if that's what you want to wear for Halloween. And yeah, just come and see the place, see what we've got.
All right, that sounds excellent, Valerie. The Brown Boot Costume Company. I'm going to have to practice saying that. Brown Boot Costume Company in Douglas. Costumes for rent, accessories. And we know accessories are important and
yes,
can really help carry off a costume for Halloween or a ball or whatever, a performance.
Right. We also have wigs. We have oodles of wigs.
Okay. Well, it sounds like you've gotten stocked up and ready to go. Are you the main person who's organizing it and running it? Is it your company or is there a group of people?
It's mostly me. I'm the owner.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got helpers, some volunteers, and one employee so far.
All right.
Yeah. So I've got a lot of help, and Perseverance Theater has been super helpful. They've definitely gotten me off the ground, so big thank you to them.
Okay. Well, that sounds great. We've been talking to Valerie Snyder, who invites all of us to come see the Brown Boot Costume Company. It's in Douglas, beside Perseverance Theater, between the theater and the cafe. And so I just should say that you can visit the costume company Tuesday to Saturday, noon to 6 p.m. And to see all these details for yourself, you can go to Facebook. So thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Mm-hmm. This is Anne with Juno Afternoon, and our guest in the studio right now is Margie Hamburger from the City Museum.
Right.
So tell us what's happening this week.
Well, we have kind of a big weekend. It's First Friday, as you probably all know, and the City Museum is opening up our exhibit of Dale DeArmond's prints called the Hat Series. They're just beautiful. They've been going up this week at the museum, and they're not something I'm familiar with, and I've looked at a lot of her work before, but there's some prints she did kind of late in life, last few years of her career, and there's 14 of them, and so that is opening up this Friday, 4:30 to 7:30. We'll be open for a reception, and it'll be running actually up through April, so you have plenty of time to come back if you don't make it this Friday, but if you want to have the goodies, the food, the drink, and the social life part, that'll be this Friday. So I'd love to have people come to that. And then on Saturday, come on back. This is October 5th at 10:30 till about noonish. Sheila Kelly, who I believe you are going to have on later in the week, she is the author of a book called Treadwell Gold, An Alaska Saga of Riches and Ruin, which has to do with her personal family history in Treadwell. And so it kind of is a combination of Juno history, hard rock, gold mining history, and also a memoir of life on the frontier. So she's going to be with us on Saturday morning to talk about her book and talk about the history of Treadwell and talk about her family's personal story during the early mining years here in our community. So that's at 10:30 on Saturday. That's a free event. There'll be coffee. Heritage Coffee is donating that to us, so people should come back after coming on Friday, come again on Saturday.
Come again. Oh, so that sounds like the City Museum is busy, even if all those cruise ship tourists have left town.
Well, we've sort of transitioned in. This is kind of the official kickoff of the fall-winter season, and so now it's time to have locals come back and visit the museum. Can I run through a whole lot of other ways locals can get involved?
Yes, you may.
All right. Well, we have a lot of shows and various activities happening throughout the fall and the winter, early spring, and if there are artists and craftspeople and musicians out there, we are looking for you. Solo artists who might want to have their own show at the museum in the year of 2015. We're already booked through 2014, but 2015, we are looking at those applications. The deadline is October 10th, so that's coming up real soon. And people can go on our website, www.juno.org/parkrec, PARKREC/museum, or you can just Google Juno Douglas City Museum, and you can get to the place where you can get a submission form, and just learn all the details about that, or stop by and I can tell you about that. So that's October 10th if you want to have your own show. The 12 by 12, a lot of people know about that. That's going to happen again this year in February, and the theme this year is black and white, so people can start thinking about what their submission for that is going to be, and again, you can go to our website to learn more about how the 12 by 12 works, but we pretty much take everybody who wants to contribute. And it can be 12 by 12 by 12. We'll take three-dimensional work as well. In next summer, we have a quilt show that we are partnering with the Capital City Quilters on. So those take a little bit longer to execute, so people should start thinking about that now if they want to be part of our quilt show. We're looking for submissions of quilts. And again, go to the website, and there's all that paperwork and details about that if you want to be in the quilt show. It has a theme. It's called Outside My Window. So that's something people come all over, particularly something about looking out the window here in Juneau, Alaska. And also, that's something I should mention for the solo artists, too. We kind of stick to our museum's mission of representing our community. So we encourage artists who want to have a solo show to kind of think about their place in the community or something that has some kind of Juneau connection. We'll take craftspeople as well. The gift shop will feature people if anybody wants to be our featured artist in the gift shop. I know in November we have Allison Mapes is going to be doing her jewelry then. So if you are a person with jewelry or handicrafts or postcards or, I don't know, something that you create and would like to sell, then contact us and we can talk about having you be one of our gift shop artists. And lastly, this is kind of a new thing. I'm new at the City Museum, so I'm coming up with new ideas. I'm looking for musicians. So I would love to talk with anybody who might like a small, kind of cozy venue to have an evening of some music at the museum. So if people are interested in thinking about that, give me a call. We can't do the alcohol thing, and we don't... I don't know if we'd fit a huge, huge sound system, but certainly a marimba player, a singer-songwriter, an acoustic folk band, a diva.
yes.
Those would all be fun people to come and put together an evening at the museum. So they should call us.
All right. Well, now that sounds like the City Museum is a happening place. And obviously to find out all those details, the web page works.
Mm-hmm.
And then let me just review this. Friday for First Friday.
Correct.
You're on the map as 4:30 to 7:30, and you're opening Dale DeArmond woodblock prints that were colored.
Right. They're actually called wood engravings.
Wood engravings.
And if you come to the museum, you can watch a movie and learn the difference.
Oh, good.
But they're wood engravings, and then they've been hand-tinted with colored pencil.
All right.
So they've got the color in them, too. And I also have to just mention, too, that in the winter, again, we like to celebrate locals, we have free admission. And that started as of October 1st, so that was yesterday, right? So all winter, thanks to our generous sponsors, this month we are being sponsored by the Pioneers of Alaska, Men and Women's Igloo Number 6. And so there is no charge for admissions to the museum. We're open Tuesday through Saturday, 10 to 4,
okay.
Except for some of these special events when... We're open then, too.
You stay open late on Friday.
Yeah.
And on Saturday morning, it's the first of the monthly coffee and collections.
Correct.
And it's Sheila Kelly talking about her book, Treadwell Gold, an Alaska saga of riches and ruin.
Yeah.
And up close and personal with Douglas and her family's history. She's the granddaughter of a machinist.
Correct.
At
Correct.
The Treadwell Mine.
Yes, yes.
So, well, it's wonderful to have you come inspire us to come to the museum.
Yeah, yeah, and we're a great place to come on a rainy day and get in out of the wind or whatever, but any day, yeah.
Any day. Well, thank you very much, Margie.
All right, thanks for having me.
This is Bird Note. You may have noticed on a trip to the shore or a waterfront restaurant where gulls gather that many gulls have a bright red spot near the tip of their otherwise yellow bills. Behind that red spot lies a considerable tail. That's T-A-L-E. In the mid-20th century, Dutch scientist Nico Tinbergen studied nesting herring gulls. He noticed that newly hatched gull chicks were fed by their parents only after they pecked at the adult's bills. Tinbergen devised experiments that varied the shape and coloration of the adult's bill. It became clear that the red spot on the adult gull's bill was a crucial visual cue in a chick's demands to be fed, and thus its survival. Tinbergen also made the case that the chick's attraction to the red spot on the bill was instinctive. This conclusion came at a time where there was a furious debate among experts about whether such behavior was learned or innate. Tinbergen's gull research helped lay the groundwork for the science of animal behavior, and in 1973 earned him a Nobel Prize. And it all started with that little red spot. Learn more about Tinbergen's research and see a photo of that red spot on our website, birdnote.org. I'm Mary McCann.
Support for this program comes from Balloons by Night Moods, offering photo booth prop boxes for your next event. Prop boxes include hats, boas, glasses, and other accessories. More information at 523-1099.
Tony Tang's Paper Moon, the JDHS Jazz Band, John Palms, Colette Costa, and Tom Loker. On Saturday, October 5th at 7:30 p.m. at Resurrection Lutheran Church, Gold Street Music opens its eighth concert season with a wide range of local talent. Tickets are available at the door. For more information, call Elva at 500-4550.
Tomorrow on a Juno afternoon, Shona Strasser will host. You'll get a preview of the presentation Modern Slavery, Human Trafficking in Alaska from the Alaska Institute for Justice. Details on Friday's First Friday exhibit at the Alaska State Museum, and an update on the future with Bob Banghart, a talk with Keola Beamer and R. Carlos Neke about their concert this Saturday at the Juno Douglas High School Auditorium, Nancy DeCherney with Arts Up, Writer's Almanac, music, and more. That's Thursday at 3 on KTOO News. If you miss a Juno afternoon, you can catch it again on the web at k2.org. This is KTOO Juno. We rebroadcast on translators K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley in Auk Bay, K269 AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K201 AM in Gustavus, KTOO BT in Hoonah, and K210 AS in Excursion Inlet on Icy Strait. We're on GCI Cable on digital channel 871, online at K2.org.
All eyes are on Speaker Boehner. The whole country knows that he is the one person who has the ability to reopen the government.
The Speaker of the House and where he goes from here.
It's Wednesday, October 2nd, and this is All Things Considered from NPR News.